Hello, and welcome to the December IASB Update Podcast, our final IASB Update Podcast for this year. I am Neely Shaw, the Executive Technical Director at the IASB, and today, once again, I am joined by Andreas Barco, Chair of the IASB. Welcome, Andreas.
Hi, Neely.
As we always do, we will run through the highlights of our IASB meeting. Now, December, the agenda was filled with quite a few decisions to progress a number of projects. On top of that, the IASB also fleshed out its priorities to facilitate digital financial reporting. Andreas, why don't we start there? Namely, what do we even mean when we talk about digital financial reporting, and what did the IASB discuss?
Thanks, Neely. When we talk about digital financial reporting, we are referring to the digital consumption of general purpose financial reports by the primary users of those reports, such as investors. As some of you may recall, earlier this year, the IASB agreed to slightly increase its level of focus on digital financial reporting following consultation with our stakeholders on the IASB priorities for 2022 to 2026. Historically, the IASB's work on digital financial reporting has primarily focused on the IFRS accounting taxonomy. However, as times have changed and there has notably been an increased level of interest in digital financial reporting, the IASB is exploring what we can do beyond the maintenance of the IFRS accounting taxonomy to help improve the usefulness, quality, accessibility, and comparability of digital financial information. With that in mind, this month, the IASB considered a strategic framework to help guide its digital financial reporting activities and priority digital financial reporting activities that the IASB could undertake. In those discussions, IASB members broadly supported the strategic framework and priority activities that staff think the IASB should undertake, including understanding how users' needs are changing in a digital world and considering the implications on IFRS accounting standards. Another interesting point worth highlighting from our discussion is the opportunities for connectivity with our sister board, the ISSB, within the digital financial reporting space. We were presented with a wide range of possible digital financial reporting activities that the IASB can undertake, and some of these activities leverage synergies between the IASB and the ISSB. So moving forward, we are aiming to periodically discuss updates on digital financial reporting activities in our meetings.
Thanks, Andreas. Let's move on to goodwill impairment, or I should say now, business combinations, disclosures, goodwill, and impairment. This month, the IASB decided to rename the project Business Combinations, Disclosures, Goodwill, and Impairment. The renaming of the project is to help clarify that the project not only includes consideration of the subsequent accounting for goodwill, but also addresses further aspects of the accounting for business combinations, especially by proposing a comprehensive set of new disclosures. The IASB also decided this month to move this project from research to standard setting. This is a big milestone, signifying that the IASB believes it is capable of coming up with proposals that will meet the project objective to provide better information about business combinations to investors at a reasonable cost. This also means that we will now be working towards publishing an exposure draft with proposed amendments to IFRS accounting standards. In December, the IASB also made some tentative decisions about other aspects of this project. Specifically, it decided not to make changes to the recognition criteria for identifiable intangible assets acquired in a business combination. In addition, it decided not to require an entity to present the amount of total equity, excluding goodwill, as a separate line item on its statement of financial position. It is worth noting that this represents a change from the respective proposal in the discussion paper. And finally, the IASB decided not to expand the scope of the project to address several other suggestions from respondents to the discussion paper. Andreas, would you like to touch on the developments of the equity method project?
Sure, with pleasure, Neely. This month, the IASB also continued its discussion on the equity method project. More specifically, the IASB reversed a prior decision to now require a company applying the equity method to measure tranches acquired successively as a single investment in an associate. This means when accounting for partial disposal in an associate, A company will be required to measure the portion of the investment in the associate to be recognized as a proportion of the carrying amount of the investment at the date of the disposal. In accounting for equity accounted investments that have been reduced to zero, the IASB tentatively decided that a company that has reduced the carrying amount of its investment in an associate to zero and has unrecognized losses to not recognize the unrecognized losses on purchasing an additional interest in the associate, and to also recognize separately its shares of the associate's profits or loss from other comprehensive income. A company that has a share of comprehensive income in an associate that is a loss larger than carrying amount of the investment would recognize and order its share of the associate's profit or loss, and subsequently its share of the associate's other comprehensive income until the carrying amount of the investment is reduced to zero.
Thanks, Andreas. Another project we discussed at the board table this month was the lack of exchangeability project. Just to provide a bit of background, this project proposes to add requirements to our standard on the effects of changes in foreign exchange rates. Specifically, it looks at adding requirements for how a company would, one, assess whether a currency is exchangeable into another currency, and two, determine the exchange rate to use when it is not. This month, the IASB made a decision to proceed with its proposed approach to set out the factors a company would evaluate to assess exchangeability. Second, specify how those factors affect the assessment of exchangeability. And third, require a company to estimate the exchange rate to use when exchangeability between two currencies is lacking. As part of the discussion, the IASB also decided on disclosure and transition requirements. This concludes the big decision-making on this project, and I expect the IASB to vote to begin the balloting process in early 2023. We also continued discussions on a few of our standard-setting projects that we've been seeing quite regularly for the past few months. Andreas, would you like to recap some of the highlights from this month's discussions on our standard-setting projects?
Yes, happy to do so, Nili. Let me start with the rate-regulated activities project. This month, the IASB discussed its proposals relating to the inflation adjustments to a company's regulatory capital base. On this matter, the IASB tentatively decided that the forthcoming standard would specify that a company is neither required nor permitted to recognize as a regulatory asset inflation adjustment to the regulatory capital base. The IASB's discussion also addressed the accounting for other items included in the company's regulatory capital base. More specifically, the IASB tentatively decided that a company is required to recognize a regulatory asset or regulatory liability relating to an allowable expense or performance incentive included in its regulatory capital base only when the entity's regulatory capital base and its property, plant, and equipment have a direct relationship, and the company has an enforceable present right or present enforceable obligation to add or deduct the allowable expense or performance incentive to or from future regulated rates. So unless these two criteria are fulfilled, such recognition is not allowed. On the subsidiaries without public accountability disclosures project, the IASB tentatively decided to retain its proposals in the exposure draft that sets out disclosure requirements on IFRS 8 operating segments, IFRS 17 insurance contracts, and IAS 33 earnings per share remain applicable for a subsidiary applying the forthcoming IFRS accounting standard, and the forthcoming standard would include reduced disclosure requirements for IAS 34 interim financial reporting. Besides that, the IASB also confirmed that a subsidiary applying the forthcoming IFRS accounting standard would be required to disclose that it has applied the standard in the same note as its explicit and unreserved statement of compliance with IFRS accounting standards. Next on my list is the Financial Instruments with Characteristics of Equity Project, or FICE for short. This month, we discussed whether to clarify the requirements in IAS 32 for the presentation of an entity's issued financial instruments. Stakeholders have raised concerns about the limited information in a company's financial statements about equity instruments is had issued. We discussed the interaction between the FICE project and the IASB's project on primary financial statements with respect to requiring additional line items. In order to respond to the needs of investors, The IASB asked the staff to further explore potential presentation requirements for equity instruments. The IASB was also informed about stakeholders' concerns regarding a subset of financial liabilities if the financial liabilities are measured at fair value through profit or loss in accordance with the requirements in IFRS 9 financial instruments. Some stakeholders have questioned the appropriateness of recognizing changes in the carrying amount of the financial liability in profit or loss when the financial liability contains a contractual obligation to pay the holder an amount based on the company's performance or changes in the company's net assets. The IASB tentatively decided against adding to the presentation requirements in IAS 32 for the financial liabilities. However, to address this concern, we tentatively decided to require companies to disclose the total gains or losses that arise from remeasuring such types of financial liabilities in each reporting period. These disclosures, together with the proposed disclosures of terms and conditions tentatively agreed to by the IASB in April 2021, will help to meet the information needs of users of financial statements.
Thanks, Andreas. While we're discussing standard-setting projects, let me jump in and provide our listeners with a quick update on our management commentary project. As some of you may have noticed, we spoke of this project briefly during the work plan update this month. For context, remember that the IASB is undertaking a project to deliver a comprehensive overhaul of IFRS Practice Statement 1 management commentary to enable a company to bring together, in a single, concise, and coherent narrative, information about financial sustainability and other factors that have affected the company in the reporting period or could affect companies' prospects. The IASB's project focuses on information that investors and other capital market participants need in assessing the company's ability to create value and generate cash flows, including in the long term. Our listeners may also recall that earlier this year, the IASB discussed stakeholder feedback on the management commentary exposure draft. Almost all investors commented on the need for the project and expressed support for the work of the IASB to develop a new comprehensive framework on management commentary. Many stakeholders also called for the IASB to advance the project in collaboration with the ISSB. And some respondents advocated a greater alignment between the new framework on management commentary and the integrated reporting framework. Since that time, there have been three important developments as we discussed in December. First, in August this year, the IFRS Foundation completed the merger with the Value Reporting Foundation. As a result, the integrated reporting framework became part of the materials of the IFRS Foundation. Second, the staff has started analyzing similarities and differences between the integrated reporting framework and the proposals in the management commentary project in response to a commitment to do so by the chairs of the IASB and the ISSB. And third, if you tuned into the ISSB December 2022 meeting, you probably already know that the ISSB decided on potential projects to include as part of its agenda consultation. One of these potential projects is a joint project with the IASB on connectivity and reporting that would build on the work in the management commentary project and the integrated reporting framework, with the goal of enabling companies to report connected discussion and analysis of its financial statements and sustainability-related financial disclosures. We encourage your stakeholders to respond to the ISSB's consultation on agenda priorities. In short, with these developments on the management commentary project, the project is progressing consistently with the feedback that we received on the exposure draft. Andreas, before we wrap up, is there anything else you would like to add?
Is it worth mentioning, Nelly, that your work plan update to the board also contained a change in timing for the upcoming ED on amendments to IFRS 9? We have pulled the exposure draft containing the proposed changes to IFRS 9, such as the clarifications around the classification of financial instruments with ESG-linked features, forward from Q2 to Q1, so we now aim at publishing the document in March next year. And further, it may be of interest to our listeners that we've just released the feedback statement to the post-implementation review, or PIR for short, of IFRS 9 on classification and measurement. The feedback statement marks the end of our PIR on the classification and measurement of IFRS 9, but more importantly, it details the IASB's findings and conclusions on the PIR. I shall point out that our PIR of IFRS 9 in total is not yet complete, We still have an ongoing review on its impairment requirements and an upcoming review on its hedge accounting requirements. But I would nonetheless encourage our listeners to take a look at the feedback statement when they have the time.
Thank you, Andreas. The feedback statement is definitely worth the read. So that is all from us this month. As a reminder, you can catch up on previous episodes of this and the IFRS Interpretations Committee on our website, as well as our YouTube channel and Spotify. For the latest developments, make sure to subscribe on our website. If you like this podcast, please do take some time to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast player. For those of you that take holiday this time of year, have a safe and restful break, and see you in 2023 for the next installment. Thank you.